Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Jeff Fiegel's with you. If you want to call us, it's 201-939-4513. Or if on Twitter, go to hashtag Giants Chat. We can communicate that way as well. We will have a guest coming on today's show from the U.
Yes.
The Miami Hurricanes, a sideline reporter for the Miami Hurricanes Radio Network. Josh Darrow will be with us at 12:30. Until then, it's Fiegel's, it's Schmelk. And we're talking Giants football with you. So, Jeff, not a whole lot going on this week. It's been kind of quiet. There has been some league news with some of the rule changes. And I guess I'll go there first, because there's one rule that is specific to special teams, and I want to kind of get your take on it. They outlawed the leap over the long snapper on field goals and punts, and field goals specifically, and extra points. Your thoughts on that change? I liked it.
I agree. I did not like the play. I liked the rule change. It's dangerous, and you know, it's for the kicker. I mean, the guy comes jumping over there, and you know, so it's a safety issue. And I just don't like the play. I think, listen, if you're going to block a field goal, do it the right way. Do it the right way.
Don't try to exploit a loophole for player safety.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, you should ask Zach Diossi this, see what he thinks about it, because I'm sure that he doesn't appreciate a guy jumping over and if all of a sudden he feels like he can't make it, and his seven-studded cleat is going to the back of his back,
neck or face,
whatever. So I feel like, again, I think it's just a safety issue. It shouldn't be allowed in the NFL. It's a stupid play. It really is. So, anyways,
there you go.
And they also shot down. Lance was on here last week when you were in recovery, and we were talking about the one where you kick it through the field goal for an extra 5 yards.
Oh, I like that. I like that rule.
I liked it, but I just knew it wouldn't pass because it's too quirky.
Yeah.
But I liked it.
It does have a very arena football-like feel
bit.
To it, doesn't
and
it?
I think that's probably why they said, wait a second. We're just going to hype
Well, I got to imagine one. Someone like you would be in favor of anything that would make kickers more valuable.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, I think it's probably not fair for every 32 kickers in the league because everybody doesn't have the same strength of a leg. And, you know, a guy, for instance, that has led the league in touchbacks, you know, he's going to get more of those than the other guy. So, I don't know, it's just kind of dumb. But I do like sticking with the rule changes. I do like the centralized replay booth. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, because that way you're going to have more consistency if it's the same group of people having an influence on it, you know?
And I feel like you should get probably a quicker response because you know that these guys are going to go right to it even maybe before the play is challenged. They're probably reviewing it already.
It'll speed things up, too.
Sure. And, you know, and I know that there's a lot of talk in the NFL about speeding games up by eliminating commercials, things like that. That's going to be one way that they're going to be able to speed a game up is a stupid replay booth. I mean, the referee's got to run all the way over and get under the hood. And, you know, it's just kind of.
As long as the tablet works now. That's the real trick. When they bring the tablet out, you got to make sure that thing works.
Yeah.
And, you know, Microsoft and the Surface do a great job with it. No reason to think it wouldn't. But, you know, technology's technology. Wireless signals in stadiums, which has nothing to do with the tablet itself. So,
But you see it at Madison Square Garden. They have a hard time with the clock.
Oh, yeah, you saw
so
that, right?
make sure that somebody plugged in the Surface and made charge it the night before. You know, I mean, it's technology. It's electronic. Something's going to go wrong once in a while, but I'm sure they'll have a backup plan.
Yeah, no doubt about it. A couple other things. Ben McAdoo and John Mara spoke at the owners' meetings over the course of the week. Their main comments, and I think that people kind of took note of, is hoping Eric Flowers can turn things around in year three. They have faith in him at left tackle. Obviously, no moves have been made at that position over the course of the offseason thus far. So, Jeff, it's going to be a make-or-break year three for him. And the Giants hope he takes a bigger step from year two to year three than he took from year one to year two.
Yeah, and the word hope is kind of a – I mean, he's got to. He has to make a jump. He's got to get better. And obviously we're hearing the news of him working out more and getting, you know, in here in the facility. And I said this last week on the show with Lance is that, you know, back that offensive line in the 07 season, those guys were in here as a group every single day working out and getting better.
I saw Justin Pierre just yesterday. He got back from Thailand.
That's what it takes. And listen, I think that he understands it as a player. I'm sure that his coaches have told him that, listen, you got to get better. And it starts in the off season, and then also another year under Solari, the offensive line coach, is going to help him. But again, they went out and got a tight end to be able to give him a little bit of help on blocking, and he's a good one. But you can't rely on that tight end to just to be like a, you know, a security blanket for him. He's got to be able to play better. I'm hoping that he will. Again, there's the word hope. And for this Giants offense to run at a high pace, he needs to be better.
Do you think we're going to see, and this was another thing Ben McAdoo spoke about yesterday, or 2 days ago, I guess it was now. Do you think we'll see a larger variety of formations this year? Maybe some more 12 personnel since you brought in Red Ellison. Jarrell Adams is a year older. Maybe you draft a tight end. Who knows? Do you think you'll get a bigger variety of personnel packages this season than we saw last year when they were at 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end, three wide receivers, so much?
Yeah, I do, because they didn't have a fullback on the roster. So right. I think now that he is on the roster, you'll see a little bit more of the 12 personnel. But I think you might not see it from the get-go. You might see that, you know, the he might line up in the backfield as a true legitimate fullback and then maybe shift over there and help him almost like the chip guys.
I got a question for you, and this is simply from a coach, I guess it's from a coaching perspective. I don't know the answer. It just popped in my head. If Red Ellison's in the game, right, and you have another tight end in the game, let's say you have Jarrell Adams in there already, right, and Red Ellison as the tight end lines up in the backfield as a fullback.
Okay.
Is that 21 personnel or is that 12 personnel?
Does
he count as a running back in this situation or does
21.
He count as a tight end?
21.
So what determines the personnel package is where the guy lines up, or is it just we're considering Red Ellison a tight end? If he's in the game, he's a tight end. Or we're considering Red Ellison a fullback. If he's in the game, he's a fullback. Or can he be considered at different positions based on where he lines? How does that work?
I think it's the latter, what you just said. I think it determines the different positions and where he lines up as the personnel package.
Interesting. So he would actually then change positions over the course of the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that he actually could start on the line of scrimmage, come off, mm-hmm. you know, and then one guy moves back on, moves around. I think they're going to utilize him. I think that he will get more catches that he had at Minnesota. Not going to be a lot because the Giants like to throw to their tight end, whether he's a blocking guy or not. He is a safety valve at some sort of progression from the quarterback. But I think that you'll see him catching a little bit more. But I think his primary responsibility is going to be to block and to jump up that running game and be able to have a fullback going in there and clearing the hole for the running back and also give the tight end, the tackle, some help.
And by the way, folks, if you're watching us on Twitter, thanks for joining us. I want to throw out one more thing before you leave us on Twitter, though, just to give you the information on how these personnel numbers work. I tried to explain as I went along, but the way personnel number groupings work, it's the number of running backs followed by the number of tight ends. So if you have running back, one running back, two tight ends, it's 12 personnel. Two running backs, one tight end, it's 21 personnel. One running back, no tight ends, which teams do sometimes. They have five wide receivers, or rather they have one running back and four wide receivers, that would be 10 personnel,
right?
For example. So that's kind of how it works. So if you're joining us on Twitter, thanks a lot. You want to watch the rest of the show, go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app. And, Jeff, we got about 20 minutes here before our guest, and there's a lot of people coming out of Miami, so I'm guessing he might take up the rest of the program. So I want to make sure I get in the people we want before we get to the guest, Josh Darrow, again, sideline reporter for the Miami Hurricane Radio Network at 12:30. So let's go to George in Staten Island. He's up first, and he will lead us off. How you doing, George?
How you doing, guys?
Good,
doing well. How are you, pal?
All right, good, thanks. I have two questions. The second question is draft-related, but the first question is, last year, two games in question, referees, bad calls. There was one call against DRC in the Raven game where DRC had position, and the interference was on the offensive player. It wasn't on DNC. The ref just blew the call. I don't know if you remember that play or not.
Okay.
And then the next game was the second Eagle game where the referees didn't call any penalties against the against the Eagles secondary. The one play in question was when
the one on Cruz when he
Eagle
grabbed his arm.
The quarterback was holding Sterling Shepard. Yeah,
Shepard, I'm
back.
Sorry. Yeah, right.
And
I remember that.
He couldn't catch the ball. And those non-calls cost the Giants that game. We should have won that game. So my question is, you know, you see in the paper the next day, the Giants are going to ask the league for an explanation. Do they ever get an explanation?
Oh, sure.
And you guys ever hear the explanation?
Oh, no. Well, we don't hear it unless they tell us about it. But, yeah, the league will reply to every inquiry from every team about a missed call or a rule explanation or whatever the case might be, and the league will explain that either, look, it was the right call because of A, B, or C, or the league will admit sometimes that, look, we screwed it up, and that was a bad call, and they made a mistake. I don't know what the league said to those two plays specifically. I remember the two plays you're talking about. The one on Shepard was on a huge – it was either third or fourth down at the end of the game. I don't remember. That was an egregious no call. The guy was all over him, and they were right. In that game, they didn't call one DPI the whole game on the Eagles. Now, there was no holding penalties on the offense called on the Giants either, so I think in general they were letting them play that game. They didn't really, you know, they didn't really throw a lot of flags, period. And then the DRC play, I know at the end of the play he was in front of him. I thought I remembered him grabbing him earlier in the route, but maybe I'm remembering that wrong. But, no, I don't know what the league responded to that, but, Jeff, you can speak to this.
Well, no, they
usually
do.
Usually you get explanations.
Actually, you said it right. They do come back, and they do tell you, you know, the refs made the wrong call there, but – okay, you got to. What do? You move on, and you know, they just want to rub it in a little bit. The coaches, they went, hey, you made a bad call there. Please tell us you did. Okay, yeah, right. We did. Great. Now what? Nothing.
Yeah.
So basically, more than anything, it's mental therapy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just hey. Right, by the way, you guys, you know, you're not that good.
Apologize to me.
Yeah.
Apologize to me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, my draft question.
Yes.
You know, the Giants say they're taking the best player available, and with a little bit of the need, but mostly the best player available.
Yes.
If both tight ends are gone, what's your guys' thoughts on Jabril Peppers to the Giants?
I don't think it makes a lot of sense, and here's why. I think he plays Landon Collins' position. And what Landon Collins is really good at, that's what Jabril Peppers would do for you. So I don't know where he would fit in, and quite frankly, he's a great athlete. I'm not sure if he's a great safety yet. And I think for a guy that's repetitive with somebody already on your team that plays the same position and throw somewhat of a project on top of that, to me, I don't think it makes a lot of sense. Jeff, your thoughts?
I kind of agree with John. Is I mean, he's a strong safety. He's very physical. You'd have to try to make him, you know, maybe a free safety, but I don't think that's what he is. I mean, then you could always say, well, what about a receiver? Well, you're not going to draft a Jabril Peppers to play receiver on this team.
Or running back, for that
matter. Or running back.
Right.
So it's kind of...
How about linebacker? And
too small.
Anyway, with Thompson's injury from last year. Also, anyway, when I watched Michigan play this year, I thought about LT. The opposing quarterback lining up, and where's Peppers? And then, you know, having to call a timeout before I get knocked on my butt.
Here's the problem, though.
I know he's an incredible athlete, but he can also play linebacker, I think.
I think he's too small to play linebacker. I think he's one of those guys that can drop down and do it on, like, passing downs. George, here's another thing, though. You say you got to know where he is at all times. How many sacks and interceptions did the guy have? Where was the big play production? I didn't see it. If this guy's, you have to know where he is, where are the big plays?
Well, you had to know where he is because he played like seven different positions throughout the season.
Right.
So that's probably more like, where is he? Oh, he's a wide receiver today. Oh, where is he? Oh, he's a running back.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's kind of more like, where is he? So.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Hey,
You're welcome.
George. Good call. Appreciate you chiming in. 201-939-4513. Freddie's in New Jersey. He's up next. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Fred.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in, Fred.
Since it's the U day, I just wanted to call in about Njoku. That would be my pick if he's there at 23. I know, don't get me wrong, Howard is a great player, but I think Njoku has way more upside. And another thing that alarms me that Howard only caught 7 touchdowns in 4 years. So just get your guys' thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, Alabama doesn't throw the football a lot. So, I mean, I listen, no matter, you cannot go wrong with any of those two. I can tell you that. I think that Njoku is a little bit more athletic. I think he's kind of a little more dynamic.
I think he's better run after the catch, absolutely.
Absolutely, and I feel like, you know, with the cover two problems that the Giants' offense run into, he is a perfect guy to run the seam route and just cause havoc down there. I mean, I like him. Now, Howard, a bigger dude, a bigger blocker, probably more of an all-around tight end, if you will. I mean, he's got good skills, and he's a big guy, and he can block, but I think the Giants have a tight end that can block. They just signed him in free agents to some big money. I think that either way you can go. I personally don't think that Howard will be there.
No, I think Howard's a top 12 pick at this point.
I agree.
I agree with you guys, too, on that. And like you said, you can't go wrong with either. I'll take either of them in this offense because they're both going to give us big, explosive plays. Real fast, another player that I want you guys to hear your thoughts on, maybe you can ask the guy coming up, the guard, Danny Isadora. He started 39 straight games, and I think he'd be a good fit in the third or fourth round, another O-lineman to bring in.
We will make sure we ask about him. He's on the list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Perfect. All right. Thanks, guys, for taking my call.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Freddie. Always good to hear from you.
Danny Isadora. Yeah, he's they have him projected as a fourth round draft pick. He actually had the third fastest 40 time of any of the guards at the combine. So
much as 40 times matter for guards.
I know. They got to have something to distinguish themselves, right?
Well, they have the weightlifting. They have the lift.
Which, by the way, this year, did you go see that?
I was there for it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was open to the fans this year.
I mean, it was a very small.
Yeah, it was like one little bleachers, right?
I mean, if there were 100 people in there, that was a lot. I mean, it wasn't. I mean, I don't think they want to make it up.
Listen, I got to tell you something. For somebody that worked out an NFL weight room as long as I did.
You would have loved to bench press 225 in front of 100
people,
I
would have loved
people,
to bench
right?
press 225 five times if I was lucky. But some of these guys, you look at what they do with that 225, it's like 135 on the bench. It doesn't look like it's anything to these guys. It's ridiculous.
No, they're like not human. It's
first of all, I'm sorry, for anybody that's ever tried to put 225 on a bar and just lift it off, it's heavy. And for these guys to do it like 25 and 30 times, that is just inhuman. It's unbelievable. And so that goes to show you how, you know, when you're up against a guy in line of scrimmage and he comes at you, that's the bam! And knock you and I out.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513. No argument for me, Feeks.
And the thing about it is we'll never, ever get that chance. So
I hope somebody will have a chance to do it to this guy.
I got a bad feeling about
this.
Yeah,
how about it, right?
Hallelujah.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the hat.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Charlie in Portland, mate.
Charlie!
Hi, Chuckles.
Good morning, guys. Hey, Jeff. Hey, John.
You were referenced like three times by other callers on yesterday's show, by the way. I'm not sure if you listened.
How's my lobster dinner doing?
I haven't listened to the whole show yet, but I will. Hey, I just want to say, hey, John, don't forget the beat writers from the University of Maine Black Bears. You might want to get them on to go through some of their
pro day.
You know what, Charlie? I'm not going to do that. So that's number one. Number two, here's the thing. If you want me to talk about somebody from the University of Maine, here's what you do. I want you, next time you call up, ahead of time, send me a tweet with a couple of guys from Maine that you want to talk about, and I will let you break down the guys from the University of Maine. How about that?
There you go.
There's only two, a linebacker and a D tackle, but I will do that.
No offensive tackles,
hey, what
huh?
What I wanted to talk about is that I heard a podcast from Jeff Schwartz about the three left tackles that he felt were the best in the draft. And he pointed out that Ramczyk is probably the best left tackle available if his medical stand up.
Okay.
And he also had some really good things to say about Robinson, the Alabama offensive left tackle.
Okay.
He said that his technique is light years ahead of Flowers. So, I mean, a lot of people have been going, hitting him on his technique, but Schwartz thinks, no, he hasn't got a problem with technique. It's more of his stance. He doesn't get in the same stance every time, and that causes some inconsistency.
I was told he was, Charlie, from my understanding on Cam Robinson, and I talked to many people about this, and I've gotten this report from more than one person. He's extremely inconsistent, and he has a lot of issues with speed rushers. Do you know who you don't want at left tackle? Someone that's inconsistent and has a lot of problem with speed rushers.
Well, that's what he said. That's coming. Some of the inconsistencies wasn't technique; it was his stance. But also, he said he really liked the way he smashed Garrett in the Senior Bowl or one of those bowls, where he like totally kept that guy at bay. The guy that's going to go number one in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third guy was Bowles. He thought maybe this guy would have the most upside, but he's got so much development to do because of he doesn't have the power. He's got to get more power, and there's a lot of things he's got to work on, but he's got incredible long arms, et cetera. So to him, Ramczyk was the guy that he would pick if he had the opportunity too. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
No, Charlie, and that's fair. Remember, there's one thing with Ramczyk that you got to worry about. Even if his medicals check out, okay, and his hip's going to be fine long term, and that's great. If he's not going to do anything on the field until August, when training camp is here, or end of July, whatever, and he probably wouldn't, based on the fact he's had hip surgery, he's going to be very behind, and he will also have gone 6 months without doing any lifting with his legs, because I would assume when you have a hip injury, you're not going to be able to really strengthen your lower half.
Well, you're doing strengthening, but not at offensive line lifting.
Correct. So he's going to – and he's a guy that already had strength issues coming out of college in terms of size and weight and stuff like that and overall strength. So you put all those three facets together – I'm not sure if he's going to be ready to plug in and play the first week of the year, trying to overcome all that other stuff.
They might put him on PUP.
That's why we need a free agent left tackle.
Where?
To have some competition. But there's another guy out there on free agency is Mike Adams, played with the Bears. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a possibility to bring in. He's 27 years old. I think he would add some competition. And, that's why free agency is so important for a left tackle. But I just wanted to bring up the three guys that Schwartz felt were the best possibilities.
Charlie, I agree with you. And I think those are the three best guys. I don't think there's any question about it. Those will be the first three tackles taken in the draft. So I think I think Jeff's absolutely right.
Hey, we had our little draft on the shakedown, and I got the pick for the Giants, so I picked the tight end from Miami. So I hope we get him.
By the way, he's
going to be dynamic.
I should tell you, Charlie, and Jeff, I'll tell you this too. Yesterday, Paul Dottino fully endorsed drafting Njoku if he's there at 23.
Well, then that means they're going to do it then.
So even Dottino's on the bandwagon at this point.
All right.
I'm not sure if that's a good thing, Charlie.
Okay, guys.
Thanks,
buddy.
Have a great weekend, and say hello to the U for me there, Jeff.
Thank you, Charlie.
Know everybody down there.
Yes.
Well, Take care.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, pal.
And I remember last year that Paul Dottino was totally on board with the linebacker that the Giants missed out on. Remember, what's his name?
Floyd. No, he was anti-Floyd.
Was he anti-Floyd?
He was anti-Floyd, yes. Oh. He was all in on Conklin. The offensive tackle.
Okay, missed that guy too.
Just missed out on. Yes, correct.
I think that there's a lot of people that are high on David Njoku. I mean,
why wouldn't you be?
I mean, he continues just to every time he's in front of scouts, they're just like, okay, this guy's legit, and he's going to be a legit first rounder. And where will he be there? Well, we'll see.
And to give you a Mike Adams thing, he only played 93 snaps last year. He missed all of 2015. And then he played around 300 to 400 snaps each of the three seasons prior to that. And at least we're in the Pro Football Focus. He never really had that great of a year.
That's not a lot of snaps, 300.
It is not. That's about half the season's worth. Probably about 35% of the season's worth.
A normal game has between 60 and 70 snaps a game.
Yeah, so you're looking at about 1,000 snaps for the year, right? Give or take.
So a third maybe, yeah.
Yeah, so that's not a lot of PT for him out there at offensive tackle.
And that's probably pretty much why he's still available.
Exactly. 201-939-4513. Let's get to Ben in Texas before we're joined by Josh Dower from the Miami Hurricane Radio Network. Ben, how you doing, pal?
Ben, how are you?
Doing great. What's up?
What's up?
Well, I keep hearing that we may be looking at a quarterback this year, and I saw Ben McAdoo was at a pro day. A couple thoughts on that. One, I thought we need a tight end and a running back that much more. And two, I'm not hearing any talk about Chad Kelly. He is a great developmental prospect, cannon arm, runs well, has a famous name with his uncle, and he's already close to Eli and to his dad, Archie. They communicate with each other, so it just seems like he could fit right in and do well.
Well, I think that he's, as far as the Giants and the quarterback stuff, they're all doing their due diligence like every team is doing. It's not something that we haven't talked about.
Right.
I think that when you look at the age of Eli Manning and how many more years he wants to play or how many more years he can play, I think that's probably those two things are very different. I mean, we just heard that Tom Brady wants to play 6 or 7 more years. I mean, I wouldn't doubt that happens if he stays healthy. But I think that you got to do your due diligence. You got to go out there and look at these guys. And really, it's almost like buying a car. If you can afford a nice car – and somebody tells you it's nice, aren't you going to go to the lot to see it? Or are you just going to take the guy's word for it on video and things like that? You want to go out and check these guys out to see. You want to talk to them, more importantly. Get their kind of how they look you in the eye and kind of some of the character issues, but also be able to see some of the fundamentals that he has on the practice field. And that's why these guys are there. Coach McAdoo has a very, very busy schedule. I'm sure that he was him and Jerry to say, let's go look at these guys. I mean, Jerry Reese was down. He went and saw the guy from North Carolina. So, listen, they're talking about it. They're looking. And it is something that the Giants organization and the fans were all kind of thinking about what's going to happen with Eli in the next couple of years. But I do know this. whatever quarterback they're looking at is not going to play this year. So I think that they've got to be able to try to fit some pieces around this team through the draft that can help them, especially in the early rounds.
No question about it. And now we are joined by our guest, Josh Dowers, a sideline reporter for the Miami Hurricane Radio Network. Josh, you got John Schmelken, Hurricane alumni, Jeff Beagles with
you. Josh, how are you, man?
Up here in East Rutherford. How you doing, pal?
What's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
We're doing fantastic. And you know what? Let's not bury the lead here. David Njoku, let's start there. He should be the first Hurricane off the board, and obviously the Giants and Giant fans are excited about adding a potentially explosive tight end. Everything we've heard about the guy, great after the catch, good hands, explosive athlete, developmental as a blocker, willing to do it, just wasn't asked to do it a whole lot. What about that do you think is right, and what do you think about that is wrong? Give me something that I haven't heard about this kid over the last month and a half.
Well, you nailed the scouting report, because I'll give you something you haven't heard. You might have seen it, but you haven't heard. This is probably going to be slightly off the radar of what NFL scouts are looking at.
Yeah.
But I cannot remember the last time I've seen David Njoku photographed with his shirt on.
Hey, listen, if I was yoked up like him, I wouldn't have a shirt on either.
Oh, that's
good
funny.
For him.
That's what a specimen he was. The other thing you probably haven't heard about him, and it's a small little tidbit. So David came in, he's up from your neck of the woods. He's from New Jersey.
Yep.
He came in as a receiver, okay, so and a highly talented athlete, because he was, I think he was the national or state champion high jumper in high school. And he just apparently verticaled 40 inches at Miami's pro day. So like he's a freak athlete and a freak specimen. The other thing is I want to say it was during either his freshman or redshirt freshman year. At the time, Miami had stockpiled receivers and they didn't have a place for him. So he spent literally a day on the practice squad or with that group, scout team, I should say, the scout team in college, as a linebacker. That lasted all of about 24 to 48 hours, and certainly that's proven to be a benefit to both the Hurricanes and the David Njoku. But he just got into the weight room. He blew up physically to the point that he looks the way he looks today. He could be probably confused for a South Beach model. He's got an electric smile, a wonderful personality, and great talent to go with it.
And, you know, you really – watching Miami the last couple years, you really saw – him come on pretty much like maybe the second half of the season last year, Josh. In my opinion, all of a sudden people were starting to pay attention to this guy. Miami is obviously they're not on TV as much as in Alabama or whatever, but I think that quickly the word got out about David Njoku, and then all of a sudden, you know, he goes to the combine, he's jumping 40 inches, so he's certainly going to be a first round draft pick. I know a lot of us around here, Giants fans, are excited about him because we feel that he would fit perfectly in this McAdoo offense with Eli Manning. By the way, Eli Manning loves athletic tight ends, be able to go down the seam, make a catch, and then get something after the catch. That's what I liked about David Njoku. What do you think about his skills after the catch, which we've seen him on TV?
Yeah, I was just saying, we personally watched him take, you guys got this thing pretty pegged down. I mean, seam, middle of the field, catch, and run, not catch and tackle.
Yeah.
Crossing routes, turn the corner, head upfield, dive into the end zone, break tackles. He's a big play. I'm going to call him a big play wide receiver, even though he's a playmaker for the tight end position, which we know how that's evolved and really grown into being a certified weapon in the NFL the way certain teams use them. And if you have that matchup, and it works in your favor, it's one you can just absolutely create total mismatches for, and that's why he's that kind of guy. They say he's a project, in part probably more on not physicality like the way he looks, physicality, i.e. being a inline blocker or something like that. But if you're looking for like a guy who you're going to split out, if you're looking for a guy to release off the line of scrimmage, if you're looking for a guy in that play action game, if you're looking a guy to occupy the middle of the field, if you're looking for a guy in the red zone, you've got your guy in David Njoku.
Yeah. I want to just add one more follow. Yeah, exactly. It'll be great in the red zone. And, you mentioned the run after the catch, and that was I watched four or five games, and I can't tell you how many times he turned a 12-yard catch into a 50-yard touchdown or a 7-yard catch into a 12-yard catch for a first down on a 3rd and 10. He was just so good at it. But I want to zero in on his route running, because you mentioned as a receiver, you don't think he is raw. Do you think he is pretty advanced as a route runner, or is he going to have some adjustments to make adjusting to the NFL route tree in the type of West Coast offense that the Giants run?
I only say he'll have adjustments just because I'm naturally someone that believes that there's always transitional periods as you move high school to college,
of course,
college to the NFL. That stuff just, you know, that stuff doesn't, I'm going to say it doesn't come easy for everybody, but I think there's always going to be those kinds of adjustments. He's played in about three different offenses the last 3 years, even when he was under Coach Golden for 2 years. They kind of tweaked their offenses redshirt freshman year to his redshirt sophomore year, and then Mark Richt came in and went more pro style this past year. So I think there's going to be an adjustment, but, you know, with all that God-given ability and his work ethic and his ability to and his desire to succeed, you know, I'm not saying he's a day one starter, but he's an impact player. I mean, he's become an impact player during his first year. He just has that kind of ability, that natural ability that from that position, you know what I mean? That, you know, Jason Witten and those, you know, Martellus Bennett, not to take away, he's a different kind of tight end. You know, he's a weapon, not a chain mover. He's a big play guy. He's a playmaker. He's a guy you bring into your offense and you say, we've got a weapon now, not just a safety valve. And he could probably be either, but because of the ability to go up and high point the ball, because of his ability to run, because of his God-given ability and athleticism, he's a guy you bring in. And I like this position in the NFL, even in college, as being that neutralizer on the offensive side of the ball. Because if you have one of these kind of guys, you can run and do so many different things with your offense.
Final one for me on Njoku, Josh, before you head on to a bunch of the other Miami players that are out there. Want to touch on a real quick. You mentioned him as a blocker, not used much in that respect. He plays outside a lot, things of that nature. When I watched the 4 or 5 games that I did of him on tape, when he was asked to block, he was into it. He wasn't a guy that shied away from contact. You know, yeah, maybe, you know, he needs better technique and things of that nature. But to me, this wasn't a guy that was allergic to physical contact here when he did have to block in the running game for Miami.
Yeah, I think it's more what you said, more how he was used than what he can do, because they had other tight ends on their team that were more that were utilized more for that role. So, you know, they got a guy that is also coming out of this draft class that played that position. They have a kid who's has his either junior or senior year coming up that was more used in that H-back, fullback kind of role. So, you know, I'm not saying he can't do it, because certainly he's, you know, beyond the athleticism, he's, you know, like I said, he's got all the physicality in the world to do it. It's just being asked to do it, and then probably just, you know, when you talk about having to work at something, he might need some more technique and development just in the skill set of being a good blocker at the end of the line of scrimmage, because he's going to be dealing with different sized guys, right, than he was dealing with in college, on top of which that really wasn't his role. So I don't think it's something he can't do. I think it's something when you look at his game, what's up at the top of the food chain in terms of where he's developed and what needs to come along. You know, the blocking is probably just something that needs to grow and be focused on a little bit more, as opposed to, oh my God, you know, he sucks and he can't do it.
Well, I think that no matter what team drafts him, he certainly will get that type of coaching at this level. These offensive coordinators are brilliant as far as where they're going to use him and how they're going to, you know, they like to get these young guys and just let them put them in the right positions to succeed, use the skills that they know how. Listen, as for a Giants fan, if they could get David and you got Brandon Marshall, who the Giants just signed as a 6'4" receiver, Eli Manning, the Giants had problems in the red zone. This could open up a whole new ball game down in the red zone. And really, you want to segue into the guy that was throwing the ball to this guy?
Well, you know, real quick, I just want to ask, Josh, have you heard anything about interest from the Giants down there? Or do you even think that Njoku's going to be on the board when the Giants pick at 23? Are you hearing that he might jump into the top 20 here?
You look at Miami's players, and he's your certified. I don't say he's not even certified, because I've seen some mocks where he's been in the second, and I think I even saw one where he was going in the third.
Wow. Okay, so, that's weird.
First of all, they're mock drafts, right?
Of course.
For a reason. I couldn't even tell you the guy's name who authored that article, but I'm just saying, like, because when I look at Miami's prospects, and I just like to get a glimpse, you know, I get an idea of where these guys are kind of fixed to land. So, like, Kaya. I've seen Kaya from the third round to, like, the fifth round. Most of Njoku's in the first round. I've seen him, I think, as high as, like, 12, and then I've seen him down in, like, the 20s.
Yep.
And so when you get to that, when you start talking about that kind of stuff,
you never know.
You know, exactly. Like, I'd like to be able to sit here and tell you, I'm not wired into the NFL. I'm not that kind of guy. So, I just look at it. You just look at the nature of the draft. Once you start getting past like 5, 6, 7, just from watching it all these years, and then any trades that come up, and then what you think a team's going to do. So, like, when you're sitting in that range, and you're the Giants at, would you say, 22?
23.
So, you know, he certainly could be there. Like, I don't think it's certainly not an automatic he's not going to be there.
Right.
So then it's a matter of, you know, how they prioritize and what their board looks like. You know, what ultimately they decide is the ultimate need, and who else is sitting on the board, and what else is out there in the rest of the draft. So I definitely, and I think he wants, I think he'd love being in New York. I think he'd love being back home. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be, you know, he's going to enjoy the finer things of New York City and the Northeast. And I think he's going to have that radiant sort of smile, that radiant personality, and certainly the rate, you know, the ability coincides with that from the get-go. I think he could be a big personality, so to speak, in that area, assuming all those things fall in line.
Well, I think that, you know, one advantage and one disadvantage if you're not him, a lot of the guys that come into the Giants or even the Jets for that matter, you know, New York is a big attraction and it's also a big deterrent. I mean, they can get in a lot of trouble around here. But I think from a kid that's from this area, you know, New York City is not going to be, it's not going to overwhelm him, you know, so I think that'll be a good thing for him. Josh, let's move into Brad Kaya a little bit. You know, obviously he didn't have the year that he wanted to. We've heard about him being anywhere from 3 to 6 round, like you said. However, I feel like, you know, as of late, he's probably done a little, he's improved on kind of the combine that he was at. His arm strength is the one, I guess, caveat that everybody asks about. Talk a little bit about Brad and what you see the upside to him being and what the downside is.
Well, I think Brad, you know, I know Brad pretty well, so I'll start on one side of the equation, which obviously doesn't necessarily mean anything as it relates to his production on the football field, but I'd be hard pressed to find a better person that you'd want on your football team, and a guy who you don't have to worry about whether it's off the field, and you don't have to worry about him putting the work in.
Yeah.
He's a football junkie. Like, you try to steer him away from that stuff, and he just comes right back to it. Like, you think he's the quarterback of the Hurricanes, and he's, you know, Mr. Cool, and I'm not saying he's not Mr. Cool, but, like, he's Mr. Football. He's like, Mr., put me in the playbook, put me in the film room. You know, there isn't enough football you can give him for him to be satiated. So that's on one side of the equation. I think he's going to be in the league for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that mean he's going to be Drew Brees? You know, I mean, obviously size-wise, it's different. You know, is he going to be Phillip Rivers? I don't know if he's going to be that. But he can definitely start games in the NFL. He can definitely be somebody's number two for you know, his career as a quality backup. And he's got some of the skill sets to be a starter in the NFL. The strengths are his accuracy, knowledge of the game, toughness, experience, maturity. I don't think his arm is weak. You know, the knock that everyone talks about, and I find it kind of funny only because it's, you know, robotic, doesn't handle pressure well. And it just makes me laugh because I'm trying to, I mean, unless you're, you know, a Cam Newton or a Dak Prescott or somebody like that, I mean, does Eli Manning handle pressure well? I mean, guys that can't move, obviously you have to have a clean pocket. Nobody likes pressure, so I find that ironic and funny that's the knock. It's also because he got knocked around a lot, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, but he hung in there and he was tough. He missed one game because he had a concussion. Other than that, he didn't miss a game. So he knows what it's like to take a hit. He knows what it's like to stand in the pocket. He knows what people are saying about him. You know, he's very aware. So I think whoever takes him, they've got a 10-year guy on their team.
And, you know, it's funny, Josh, taking a look at the rest of the guys coming out of the U, it's a long list. And I think, you're going to have a lot of names called on days two or three of this draft, because there are just a lot of guys that are coming out that I think can be either developmental or quality depth guys in the NFL for a real long time. So let's stay on the offensive side of the ball. A couple of the weapons that worked with Brad. Tell me what a team would get with Stacy Coley and with Joe Yearby if they decide to draft them.
With Stacy Coley, you're getting a guy who certainly can make plays, pretty dynamic. Just, I think, you know, he's clocked in the, you know, I think the mid fours, the combine, and I think he might have ran in like the 4.3s. But I mean, I don't think he's a 4.3 guy. I mean, you can train to be a 4.3 guy for pro day, but a guy that, you know, with Stacy's biggest downfall is his strength and his health, and occasionally his attitude. But some of that, I think, is derived from his desire to compete. The kind of kids that are from down here, they're just so competitive. They want the ball. When things don't go their way, sometimes they get a little down. But he's a guy, I don't see him being, you know, your Odell Beckham or your Antonio Brown or your Julio, you know, any of the, at that level guy. But he's a two or three in the league that, you know, can stick around for a while. Yearby, I like Joe Yearby. I just don't think he's going to have the speed to stick and the size. He's about a 5'9 back, you know, pretty well built. Great. I mean, he's got great vision, great patience, knows how to set up blocks. It's not like just a straight ahead runner, but I'm just not sure he's going to be able to get you enough plays with what he brings to the table that he, you know, he's a guy that I look at him super late or undrafted free agent. And that's just because, again, the size speed ratio. As a pure running back, I covered him in high school as well as in college. It's hard to find a guy that can press a hole and read blocks and see where things are and set that stuff up. But at the same time, you've got to be able to gain, you know, 7, 8, 10, 12, 20 to 30 and not, you know, 4 to 6. For what he looks like.
Yeah, I'm going to let Jeff attack the defensive side of the ball with you in a second, because he's got a bunch of guys he wants to talk to you about. So I want to knock out the last offensive guy that is expected to be drafted, and that's guard Danny Isadora. Tell me, is he a road grader, physical, push the defensive line back type of guy, or is he more of a movement, finesse type of zone blocking guard?
He's a guy with great speed, great intelligence. I think he's probably a little more the secondary than the latter, you know, than the primary. Has really showed out well in the off season. I know his offensive line coach, they all loved him. That, you know, whether it was, you know, the new coach this year, Art Kehoe, the previous years before, came out of a good high school program, has always been highly well thought of, hardly missed any games, played through pain, super tough, super experienced, super smart, real quiet, doesn't say a lot, just lets his work go out and kind of speak for himself. So, you know, he's a guy I think that might see the biggest – well, some of the DBs now with how they perform, especially Adrian Culver. But I think he's a guy who might see move. His arrow might be pointing up.
Well, I think, yeah, I think – well, you mentioned Adrian Culver. I mean, he's a guy that a lot of people has a free agent. So he might move into, you know, maybe six rounds somewhere in there from pro day. But the guy I want to talk to, he's probably got one of the best names ever, is Corn Elder. Corn. His first name is Corn. Is that a short for something, or that is his name? Josh,
I want to say he's Cornelius.
But, okay, all right, no, that's what I thought. But you know, you look at this guy; he's a good tackler. I have here on my notes. You know, he's not a big guy; he's only 5'10", but he's very fast. And a lot of the people have him going in, you know, third, fourth round. Talk a little bit about him, and then the safety, Rasheem Jenkins. Is it Rasheem? What's his?
Rashawn.
I can't read my own writing.
That's right. You just made every scout in the NFL like, who's this kid? Who's this guy they're talking about? on our board. All right, so let's start with Corn Elder. Love Corn Elder. A little bit like Joe Yearby from that size standpoint, except this is not a knock against Joe Yearby, but Corn Elder, yes, he has slight of frame, but my God, he plays so much tougher than what he looks. Extremely smart. He was a point guard All-State in basketball in his hometown of Tennessee. He is not afraid to hit. He is not afraid to tackle. He is not afraid to blitz. He will break up passes. He will put guys on the ground. He can intercept the ball. He can play special teams, which is obviously highly important. when you're looking at 53-man rosters and negotiating the number for game day. I love Corn Elder. I think he's a hell of a player. I think people should look past the size with him. Just from what I've seen of him, I think you can use him in nickel. You know, you can try. You know, he's been about that weight, 180 pounds most of his career. Putting on weight's been his problem. But other than that, they don't have too many holes in his game from my standpoint.
Slot corner, you would say? Slot corner, you would say, Josh, for him in the pros, play more inside than outside given his size.
Correct, and special teams.
Got it.
That's how I was. And then, I mean, he could develop into something, you know, that moves from inside to outside over time, you know, just with a little development and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Rashawn Jenkins, again, I'm not saying I love these kids because I know him well. He's a kid that I've seen really grown up in 5 years in Miami, you know, just totally mature, you know, a guy who is, you know, he has a young boy now, a young son, has really changed his life. Waited for his opportunity, fought through a really bad back injury when he redshirted, totally transformed his body, his attitude, his ability. And I know when you're around him, he's very intelligent. And I know one of his coaches said that we're just BSing at the end of the season. He said it's the smartest. DB he's worked with in his time in college ball.
Well, that'll go a long ways in the NFL,
especially at that position, right?
Yeah.
Especially at that position, because when you're the top layer or the back layer, whichever way you want to do it. But you're reading a lot of different things in your last line of defense. So, you know, to me, I think you got another guy in that fourth, fifth round, maybe. You know what I mean? It comes in and makes your roster just like Corn. Plays in some nickel dime, you know, makes his name on special teams, and then you work and develop with him because he'll hit. He's probably more of a hitter than, let's say, a ball hawk in the back end of the secondary, but he'll put people on the ground. He knows where to be. I think he appreciates every opportunity he's about to have, and he understands the game. So, to me, you've got a lot of guys on this team that are coming out in this draft that are going to go between, like, the third and the sixth.
Yeah.
Maybe the third and the seventh, and they're all going to make teams.
Sure.
They're all going to make teams, and they're all going to contribute. You know, Njoku is going to be the guy that's going to be the star, you know, should be the star. Kaya has that has that chance. And the thing about Brad is he doesn't even care. Like, if Brad gets drafted in 6-2 years, he doesn't care.
Sure.
Like, he wants to go to the league. He wanted to go.
He's going
to
be a fighter.
But he also, like I talked about before, I think he's pretty aware of who he is, what he's good at, what he needs to get better at. And if he had to sit for 2 years and just sit in the film room and be on the practice squad, or maybe not the practice squad, but, you know, taking reps for the scout, you know, however that would be, so that he, when he gets his opportunity, because remember, he played as a true freshman day one on the road at Louisville. I think he's perfectly okay with being, let me become the best quarterback I can be. Let me learn the NFL. Let me learn this, because he'll learn the offense. Whatever you give him, he'll learn it inside and out. And then give him his year or two, like with Eli, like you guys you were talking about right before you brought me on.
Yeah.
Let's just say he came to the Giants. Give him his year or two. Let him sit. Let him wait. Let him learn. Let him get ready. And then he's ready to roll. And he will enjoy. Like, some guys won't enjoy those 2 years. I should be starting. They'll be bitching and they'll be moaning. He would eat it up. You'd have not one issue with him if that's what his role was supposed to be.
Josh, final question from me. And then you got a bunch of guys here that I think are going to kind of be fringe, end of the draft, maybe undrafted free agent guys. If you could just, you know, give me quick little thumbnails, or maybe if I'm underrating some of these guys, let me know. I'm going to throw a few names out to you. Jamal Carter, Jermaine Grace, even the punter, Justin Vogel, Muhammad Al-Kadin. These types of guys that you think will probably be late day three picks.
You just created a completely new player with that one.
Okay. how do you pronounce that name there?
Well,
did I butcher it?
His name is it's Al-Kadin Muhammad.
Al-Kadin Muhammad. I'm sorry. There you go.
But I'll just call him Quan Muhammad, and you're good to go.
Okay. Quan, excellent. Good to know.
I think you're going to see it go. You know, Muhammad, Vogel, Carter, Grace, in terms of, like, best chance to worst chance.
Sure. Okay.
Muhammad's biggest knock is he's been kicked off the team twice. So, he didn't do any he allegedly punched. I think he hit another student, but his kid was involved. That was a whole other story. So, and the stuff with the car. I mean, it wasn't for, like, nothing that happened at Baylor. You know what I mean? So, like, you can probably overlook some of that if you're willing to take a chance on the guy. But he's 6. But he's another Njoku, right? Not probably as athletic, but in that 6'4", 260, like, where'd he come from? Like, where'd they make those? Can I buy some? Is there anything I can buy to make myself look like that? Because that doesn't happen. Vogel, you know how punters go. It's, you know, if a team wants to take a chance towards the end of the draft. Carter's going to be more your in-the-box guy, rip your head off. And then Grace is a freakish athlete for a linebacker. It's just that he's, you know, I think he's a little light in the fanny. So can he hold up at the NFL level?
Interesting that when you talk about Grace and Muhammad, both of those guys were suspended, but they were invited to the pro day, which I thought was pretty cool. They were able to come in and actually get some work in there.
Mark Strickland's pretty good about that. So, they were both Grace stayed in school and trained down here. I think Muhammad left to go to school and then came back for the pro day.
Gotcha. And, you know, really, when we haven't talked much about Mark Richt and what he's really done for that program and really bringing Miami football back into to focus here. And really, I think this is a good start for the Hurricanes and their draft coming up this year, having another first rounder in there with David. Justin Vogel, obviously watching him last year, one thing I noticed about Justin is that he'll do well at this level if he can, you know, keep up his consistency and accuracy. Man, he can directional kick like really well. Obviously I think he'll get a shot somewhere, probably as a more like a priority free agent. Somebody's going to want to sign him right after the draft if he doesn't get drafted.
You guys watch a lot of Miami football.
Well,
Jeff Fiegels does because he's an alum. And by the way, I got to warn you, Josh, next year – you're going to have a real problem child showing up to campus down there because Jeff's son is going to show up.
Oh, yeah.
And if it's anything like working with his dad, let me tell you, you're going to have your hands full. It's going to be a real problem down there.
No, listen.
So that sounds like code for problem means lots of fun.
Yeah, that's it. You are a smart guy. You went to Penn, right? So that's why you're very smart and you figured that one out. But I will tell you, we're as a father and my son going down there, and as an alum, I am very excited about Miami. And obviously, like you said, I've watched a lot of Miami football the last couple of years, particularly. But I am very excited about the Hurricanes. I'm very excited about Mark Richt and what he's doing down there. I know you're around it a lot more than we are. I'm sure that the theme down there is that Miami football is back and it's going to be an exciting year, and we appreciate you spending some time with us.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. Great stuff, man.
Awesome. Appreciate it, fellas.
Okay,
that's Josh Darrow, sideline reporter for the Miami Hurricanes Radio Network, also helping us out with the name so we don't look like morons.
That's
at least.
Okay.
We look like morons once, now we look like morons again.
Well, I would have
so
pronounced it.
Al-Quadin.
That's what I would have said.
Yeah. Well, right? I swapped them because the way that the name is listed here, they have – last name, comma, first name, and I forgot to flip him when I went through it, trying to pronounce it.
Okay, got it.
And that's why I butchered it.
Yeah, but I mean, well, some
I
of these.
I blame for. Hey, look. I tried my hardest to get all this stuff right, but I'm not going to nail all guys in the 7 rounds. I'm just not.
No, no.
Sorry.
And Miami had 15 seniors this year at their pro day. So, I think you're right. I think you'll see a lot of these guys on rosters after round June, July, they'll be on the rosters and they'll be in, you know, but it's tough.
You really like Kaya, huh? I could tell.
You know, I'll tell you what about Kaya. Okay. He's tough dude. Okay. He's a big dude. He's 6'4". Okay. So, but I think that when you get into the pros, they'll beef him up a little bit, but like you heard Josh say, he's like a football junkie.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the type of guys that, you know, you can take a chance on someone like that because you know that you know what you're going to get out of this guy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's a total upside. There's no downside to it. He's not going to get in trouble.
Right.
He's going to be in the building. He wants to learn.
So worst comes to worst, he's a really good backup for a decade.
Yeah, or a guy that has to step in and start for 3 or 4 games because your starter's hurt. But, you know, there's also a propensity that maybe he just fits into some team that all of a sudden – because of his work ethic and because of his, football acumen, that he'll get in and be a starter. Who knows? So,
anybody else jump out at you from watching the Canes this year and, you know, checking out all the guys you did research on? Anybody that jumps out to you that you're like, wow, I think this guy's better than what maybe people give him credit for?
I like the Jamal Carter. I like this guy. Like he's a Collins. He's a hitter. He's a guy that comes down. He's a box safety, and I think that he'll get drafted and he'll make a team somewhere. But he's actually, I was doing a little research, just some of the stuff is here. He had a really good pro day at Miami. He improved from the combine in his 40 time, his bench press, his vertical, all that kind of stuff. So, and you know, I always sometimes wonder, you know, it can't be a bad thing when you go to the combine and you test A and then you go to your pro day and test B. Obviously it looks like, you know, you've done a little bit better. There's, I think guys, when they're at the combine and you know, you go to this, they're nervous.
Oh yeah.
They're so nervous. Now, when you get at home and you're on your own practice field, you've been there for years. You know, you just kind of things, you loosen up a little bit. So, I would put more credence in the pro day than the combine because of the pressure. And you know, the one thing that you get, and John, you know this, the one thing they get at the combine more than they get from the athletics part of it is the one on one.
Well, yeah, and the medical
conversation in the medical. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind of thing. So I don't know. I don't know. Their pro day, are they allowed to interview these guys at pro day?
No, I believe they have to set up separate talks with them while they're out there. I'm not sure what the exact rules are. To be honest with you, I don't know.
Who knows? Who knows? But you know what? And you heard Josh say that Coach Richt is good about this. There are some coaches that are not good about pro days. They're not good about guys
really
during the season letting pros scouts into the building to watch film.
They allow them to give people a hard time, right?
Or they don't even let them in.
Wow.
I know Harbaugh's that way. He's just like, no, you're not coming in.
Which is funny, considering when he was a coach, he was probably the one begging the college coaches to let him in to look at the guys.
Yeah.
You figure he'd understand.
You would think that he would understand that, but I think that he's just, you know, has a policy and that's the way it's going to be. I think it's more like, I don't want to deal with it while I'm doing this.
Right.
You know, so.
Harbaugh being abrasive. I don't believe that for a second. Anyway.
I do. I do.
I was being sarcastic. All right. Next week, we're going to continue our go-around college football. Monday is going to be Stanford.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Tuesday is going to be Michigan. I'm doing this by memory because I couldn't find my email. Wednesday is going to be a combination of Missouri and Western Kentucky.
Ooh.
So that'll be Charles Harris and Forrest Lamp. Are your two big guys coming out? The next Thursday is going to be Florida State. And of course, you have Dalvin Cook and a couple other guys coming out of there. So that's going to be next week. Then we'll finish up the colleges the week following. Next Friday, me and Jeff will be with you. We'll have a draft guy to go over the overall draft with you, kind of wrap up where we are. And that'll be about 3 weeks before the first round of the draft.
I was just going to say, what are we about? We're about a month away, 3 weeks away.
Next Thursday will be the three-week bing.
And right down the turnpike in Philly.
Right, and they're going to say they have a lot of people there, they say. They're doing it outdoors. They're going to set up a lot of chairs. They're going to have like 50, 60,000, I understand. Or even more than that.
50, 60,000 Philly fans down there. Philly people. That's crazy.
And you thought like the Jets were booted Radio City Music Hall when they did it there, all their picks. Can you imagine what those Eagles fans are going to do to like the Giants, Cowboys, and Redskins selections? Not even be able to hear them.
They need a lot of security.
This is outdoor. I mean, if they want to throw stuff, you can chuck stuff at the
podium.
Where are they
actually doing
it? Bad.
Where are they actually doing it at?
If they're doing it on, I think they're doing it on the steps, the Rocky steps, right?
No.
Yeah,
no,
they're doing it at the Rocky steps.
Awesome. Right on the Schuylkill River.
Yeah, sure.
That's it. Right there. That's cool. You know what? I
think we should send you down there to be the Giants rep.
Okay. I'll be if that's fine.
You're a former Eagle. I'm sure they'll show you some level of love.
I get in the car and drive down there not to deal with the airports. That's fine. I hate the airports.
It's an easy drive.
It is an easy drive. It's an hour and 30 minutes.
Anyway,
it's not a big deal.
It'll be fun. A lot to do as we get ready. And, of course, the players come back on April 18th, which is a couple Tuesdays from now. So that'll be 2 weeks from Tuesday. The players will be back, and they start doing their physical training. They can't do any on-the-field stuff.
And
it'll
be very
weeks.
Interesting to see, you know, as a coach, you would like to have 100% involvement in that.
And based on the current contract situations, you would think you would have. No one's been franchised. No one's holding out, so you would think that's going to be the case. Anyway, for Jeff Eagles, I'm John Schmelk. Have a great weekend, everybody. Survive the bad rain today. We'll be back with you on Monday, Lance and Paul Bettino on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Have a great day.